Hi, everybody, and welcome to this special episode of the Combinate podcast. I'm your host, Subi Sade. On this episode, I was joined by Ira Mann, who's the president at IQ Referrals. Ira and I talk about the current pharma medtech market and what folks who have been impacted by the more recent layoffs in big pharma medtech can do to position themselves for success. We talk about why good people leave good companies. We talk about what he hears from people related to motivation in pharma and medtech. And we talk about insourcing and onshoring that he's seeing in U.S. manufacturing. I really hope you enjoy this episode with Ira Mann.
Hello, Combi Nation. My name is Subi Sade. I've spent over a decade in medical device, pharma, and combination product development. Our industry feels complicated sometimes. Drugs, devices, clinical trials, submissions, sterilization, validation, design control, risk management, market access, reimbursement. The list goes on. My goal is mastery. So this podcast is to ask questions I have to people who may have the answers. Each week on the Combinate podcast, I talk to someone about their area to further understand and simplify. Whether you're a pharma person trying to understand the next wave of products, or a device person trying to navigate a pharma system you're unfamiliar with, or a newbie in both areas, I invite you to listen, and together we can simplify by combinating.
For 20 years, I have focused on biopharma device, predominantly, I'll say quality, tech ops, regulatory leadership, and it is not to be discouraging for everybody, but it's as bad as I've seen it. It's as bad as I've seen it in 20 years. Now, it doesn't mean it's a temporary thing, I will say. On the one side, this time of year, it's always from mid-November to mid-January is always a slowdown. That doesn't affect supply and demand. But what is affecting supply and demand is the capital crunch. But smaller companies in particular are not able to hire and grow the way they want to. Larger companies are business as usual, but this is also a time because of rising costs for them that they're trying to cut costs in other ways. So a lot of the bigger folks can make their Wall Street numbers and get their bonuses, and there are truly cost to offset. But commercial is okay. Development is being impacted. And the best way I could summarize it is I truly believe, and I've been talking to a lot of executives, that the science will be stronger than investors' patience will be. So this will be temporary, but it could last a good few more months.
When you say the science will be stronger than investors' patience, what do you mean?
What's developing, both from a biological standpoint, some of the products that are out there, some of the assets under development, from a medical device standpoint with the usage of AI and technology, and also to meet in the middle with combination devices. You know, combination devices and self-administered devices are, the science and the technology is fantastic. The capabilities are fantastic. Investors are going to get tired of sitting on the sidelines, seeing bigger companies acquire them instead of them being involved. And their risk appetite, their risk tolerance will increase because they're tired of their money not going anywhere. It's not like a lot of the equity, the VC and PE folks don't have the money to invest. It's just there's a lot of risk right now, particularly related to costs that companies have, and also whether they'll be profitable, and also what may happen with the Inflation Reduction Act too. So that can affect things.
And so, in the current climate, obviously there are some people who have been let go. One of the companies that I used to work at in the past recently did a pretty significant round of cuts. And so what do you recommend those people do?
Obviously, it depends on their personal preference and how comfortable they are sitting on the sidelines for a little while. I never recommend somebody taking a job that they'll feel good about. If they think it's going to be a short stint, it's probably not a good idea. The only exception is if they've really had a great track record of longer stints, then they might get away with a mulligan. But people still have to evaluate opportunities for great long-term potential and for their growth. I think it was JFK who had said something about rising tide raises all ships or something. That's still what you look for. A rising, a company that's growing, there will be opportunities. If it's stagnating, don't set your expectation on being able to grow personally if the company's stagnating. To go back to your direct question, though, about what people should do, I would say, don't lose hope because the smaller companies aren't responding or you're not getting as much of a response. Many, many more people responding right now. Bigger companies will start to respond again starting in the middle of January, but there's going to be a lot more competition. So to be honest, you've got to do a much better job on your resume to be noticed. And when you interview, you're going to have to be better as well. You know, when you interview, there's a lot of noise out there. These companies are going to be flooded with applicants. So you better know how to stand out at first and stand out when you interview.
Is the resume that significant, or do you emphasize things like LinkedIn and other tools to outline a portfolio, or what are your thoughts there?
The resume is still the starting point. The resume absolutely still is. Because especially with a larger company, the smaller the company, the more likely you're able to rely on networking. You still have to get in with a resume if there's any kind of HR or talent acquisition person, but the larger the company, the more automated the system has become, and the more likely your resume is not going to get to anybody unless it first passes their automated or gatekeeper test. So it's going to have the keywords that they're looking for, and it's going to have to show the correlated career advancement or correlated industry that they're looking for as well. You know, they say, with resumes, I know with sales, you have something like 20 seconds or whatever it is to get somebody's attention. With resumes, the rule of thumb I've always seen is 6 seconds. If they don't see what they're looking for right away, whoever's looking at it right away, especially on page one, they're not getting to page two. They're not going to it. Don't they go, oh, I had it on this role on the second page or the third page. No, they have to see what they're looking for. They're not moving on. You have to sell, not tell. It's not just a chronological list of what your responsibilities were. You have to share what you accomplished. You have to share. It's great to show your progression. For instance, you never want to, if you've had multiple roles within a company, you never want to just have your last role. You want to show that progression. You always want to customize your resume. And I don't mean embellish. I'm never just going to tell anybody to embellish a resume, but you're always going to want to customize it. For what company A is looking for is not necessarily what company B is looking for. And if you have something that relates to whatever the company is, you make sure they see it. And it's on page one, especially. And you quantify your accomplishments and it's easy on the eyes. Oh gosh, anybody who has, you know, non-bulleted resumes, paragraph resumes, those aren't going to get read by anybody.
And so in terms of what motivates people to leave, what keeps people around, what patterns have you seen in that regard?
I've done, again, 20 years doing this. In a lot of ways, I'm like a priest in the confessional. You know, I hear a lot of reasons why, you know, people make changes. And I could tell you, it's more than a leadership. You know, it's most often a leadership. People don't necessarily lead companies. A company is an entity. It's desks. It's an organization. But there's nothing to a company. It's the leadership. People want to have. I'll say actually, I've done some studies on this too. Let me find what I have here. All right, here we go. All right. Number one is just a lack of clarity in the goals and the responsibilities. That is probably biggest reason. The opposite of clarity is anxiety. So if people don't really know what they're supposed to be accomplishing, it's a stressful situation for them. Stagnation, a lack of, well, I should say, number one truly is, and you might want to start this part over, but for number one is a lack of advancement opportunity. People do want to advance. People don't want to stay in the same role. It doesn't always have to be a hierarchical growth either. It's just more opportunities to advance and learn. But hierarchical growth, definitely people do a lot of times have an ego attachment too. But lack of clarity and goals is the second big thing. You do have, as I that may have mentioned that the opposite of clarity is anxiety. And when there's not clarity as to what their goals and their responsibilities really are supposed to be, it's a stressful situation for people. Stagnation.
Yeah, there's a...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's a famous quote by a philosopher. Okay. I don't remember which one, that anxiety is the dizziness of freedom.
Oh, it's a good one too. That's a good one. Yeah. But the stagnation, a lack of management support or appreciation. Your leaders have to support you. You have to feel that. You have to feel appreciated by them. Management carousel too. I often hear somebody tell me, I've had 3 bosses in 2 years or 4 bosses in 5 years, and I'm tired of adjusting to new styles or training my boss. And so they see that carousel as a reason why. You know, there's also could be just a dislike or lack of faith in management or the stability of the company because companies aren't communicating. If a company is not communicating what's going on and there's uncertainty because of either people leaving or stock price or issues with clinical trials, that lack of communication stokes the fires of uncertainty and makes people need to look. It's opportunity to grow, opportunity to learn, opportunity to feel appreciated. That's it.
In terms of what makes people stay, is it the opposite of those things? Is it opportunities for advancement? It's clarity on responsibility and goals. It's support and appreciation, faith in management, and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, promotion. People, I'll say advancement financially as well. People aren't pushed out usually. They don't get pushed out for a lack of money, but money can keep somebody and money can pull somebody into a new opportunity. So there is that, but money certainly isn't the number one reason. But yeah, you're right. It is appreciation and like of their management. It is advancement opportunities. It is learning opportunities. There's a story once I heard. I'll give you this that I once heard to give you an example. This came actually, I remember hearing this from Simon Sinek. He talks about motivation and how it's so important to motivate people, something to believe in, something bigger than their job to work towards. So it was from him. I heard the story of the 2 stonemasons. You walk up to the first stonemason and you ask the person, do you like your job? And he looks up at you and says, okay, I've been building this wall for as long as I can remember. The work is monotonous. I work in the scorching hot sun all day. The stones are heavy. Listing them day after day can be backbreaking. I'm not even sure if this project will be completed in my lifetime, but it's a job. It pays the bills. You know? So you thank him for his time and you walk on. Then you come up to another stonemason and you ask him the same question. Do you like your job? And he looks up at says, I love my job. I'm building a cathedral. Oh, sure, I've been working on this wall for as long as I can remember. And yes, the work is sometimes monotonous and tiring. I work in this hot sun all day long. The stones are heavy. Lifting them all day can be backbreaking. And I'm not even sure if this work is going to be completed. This project is going to be completed in my lifetime. But I'm building a cathedral. If the 2 stonemasons, they're doing the same thing. The difference, though, is that one has a sense of purpose to what they're doing. So he feels like he belongs. He comes to work. He knows he's part of something. And it's sort of something bigger than just the job he's doing. So having that sense of why changes his whole outlook. So work should be inspiring to us. So they got to have that sense of why. Unless you're an astronaut, it's usually not simply the work itself that's inspiring us to come to work. It's we come to work for the people that we're with, the purpose of what we're doing, what we're creating, what we're impacting. You know, you don't want your employees to come to work to build a wall. You want them to come to build a cathedral. And in this case, it could be contributing to just the development of some kind of life-changing combination device for a lot of the people who might listen to you. You want them to feel that they're doing this.
So this is something that I personally do not struggle with in the least. Really have not struggled with it since I've gotten in industry. I think if you're doing work where you're, I'm a process guy and I'm a product guy. So I personally don't like to be far removed from something that will eventually get into the hands of patients, because to your point, if all I'm doing day in and day out is doing some admin system or doing, say, I don't know, management review or something that is, yes, it's quality related and yes, it's important, but it's not so focused on the product, I just find it harder to be as, you can't be 100% intrinsically motivated and you can't be 100% extrinsically motivated. You have to strike a balance. And
I appreciate that.
I'm wondering from your point of view, is that, because you said, you know, unless you're an astronaut, I kind of feel like we're equivalent to astronauts. Do you find that people really struggle with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They do. There's so many people, even though we're an incredible industry. You and I both, and the people who are probably going to be listening to this, work in an incredible industry. So many of them are not motivated because the organization or the people around them are not doing well at keeping them motivated, at communicating what the mission is, at bringing in patients who might benefit from the product, or by just not continuing to keep them in the loop for the goal and what the impact of what they're doing is. So yes, absolutely. That does happen. And actually, to be candid, I think quality in our industry, you know, leadership isn't really any different, or the leadership that's needed in our industry is not different than other industries.
Sure.
The only thing I would say is quality professionals, from what I've seen, have a bigger impact in our industry than other industries. And they, with that, there is a stronger need to have them feel like they are part of the process in the future and the impact that they're making. There is more of a need to make them feel part of the team.
Yeah. And I think that is a good point, where in other industries, quality is not so inherently baked into the kind of basic table stakes of being in our industry. You can't be any kind of pharma company or medical device company without having an emphasis on quality. It doesn't happen. It's as low of a requirement as you can, I should say, it's as base level of a requirement as you can get. How did you land in quality regulatory?
Yeah. I have a background actually in compliance and auditing is what I originally had done. And I wasn't as involved with anything as any kind of products as sexy as the products that we get to work with nowadays, though. I'll admit that.
Sure.
I was doing my thing in industry, compliance and auditing, et cetera. And then I started doing some consulting, and just seemed like every recruiter I came to asked me to become one. So 20 years ago, I took the plunge and did some contract work at first, a contract recruiter, which wasn't for me. So I switched to perm, and now I've been coaching people and making matches from referrals for a lot of years. It's a fun way to do things. You know, when you do things from referrals as opposed to resumes, it's really fun to be able to help people make a change for what really means something to them, and with companies that you're able to make a difference with.
Since you're based on referrals, what do you recommend in terms of people's own kind of networking habits?
I posted a video about 2 weeks ago, part one of a video. I'm going to do part two probably next week or two after, about specifically about networking and using LinkedIn as well. Networking is, you're making a deposit. You know, you're making a deposit. Don't network with people unless you plan on also, you know, being prepared to truly work with them and let them make a withdrawal as well. You know, you want to help people. You want to connect people who should be connected. You want to impart information with people. You know, I absolutely recommend, you know, LinkedIn for a great way to network, but it's also going to events and meeting with people face to face, podcasts like this, making comments on people's, whether it be podcasts or LinkedIn posts or and asking questions, stirring up discussion, but truly having an interest. And because you might grow from that yourself as well. And then just connect people who should be connected to one another. But, it's paying it forward. And I'll tell you, when you recommend somebody, or we'll say introduce two people who should be introduced, you increase your value to both of those people. And so networking in a lot of ways is increasing value.
And so have you, maybe I was wondering if you could tell me about some of the placements that you made where I've seen particularly in the leadership space where sometimes a role will be open for a really long time. And I'm wondering if you have any success stories, horror stories, what have you, of roles that were open for a really long time and why it is that sometimes finding a particular person takes longer than expected.
Okay. That's a good question. There are times when simply demand outweighs supply. That's an easy reason. When the market was hot until a year or so ago, and particularly in locations such as Boston, where they just couldn't get enough people to fill roles. That's one reason. Another reason is these not moving fast enough. Sometimes a company has to, too many things have to go right for something to get scheduled and for feedback to have to happen. And it takes too long and a person loses interest or another opportunity comes up. There's plenty of times that the negative feedback loop, or I'll say the polarization that you see within group debriefs, one person saying one thing negative about a person during a debrief can cause the whole process to crash because nobody's leading it. Nobody's leading it saying, hold on a sec, is this something really that matters as much, or why do you feel that? It just becomes something negative and then everybody wants to, is concerned about covering their own butt and if we now hire this person, I'm going to look bad because I supported this. But when it's not, let's evaluate the real thoughts that the person has. Not everything, every reason that somebody says something's negative is wrong. Another big reason, sometimes there are too many unknowns. For instance, if a role is heavily dependent on equity or bonus or other things, candidates should be able to be told that more in the beginning. So they understand, whether it's going to line up. Don't wait till the end of now. What else? Unrealistic expectations, another one. Sometimes a company may have the thinking that they have 10 requirements, they should get all 10. No. If you have 10 requirements and a person has all 10 of those, you can't afford them, or they're already above the role. They have to determine what's realistic to bring aboard. A company sometimes should hire more for potential versus actual experience. So they should see that the thinking, that the person's vision and interest is aligned sometimes more than the direct experience. Those are some of the reasons that I can think of that the role goes longer. It's actually sometimes location too. I'll tell you, since the pandemic especially, the genie came out of the bottle with remote roles. A lot of times because people stayed with companies through the pandemic and their role became more flexible, but the new company may have a desire for it not to be as flexible. It's harder for a person to give up that flexibility that the new company is not offering now because their preference is for the genie to get back into the bottle.
Have you seen a shift away from remote, or is it,
yes,
is it something that on average though, it's increased? If you look at before COVID and now after COVID, at basically, the baseline has increased?
Yes, it had. Totally increased. Yes. There's a lot of companies that saw it can be done and it remains to be done. And they can't get, as I use the term, they can't get that genie back in the bottle so easily. There are other companies that really do want that. It could be because of truly the need to have groupthink there. They want people on site sharing ideas. It could be the inefficiency of leadership to foster that ability to be collaborative and have ideas grow when people are remote. But it doesn't just happen naturally. It takes engagement. So it could be that. It could be a need. For example, there's been a big increase. One thing that is beneficial for job seekers over the long term in this country is that there is a big push on insourcing or onshoring, whichever one you call it. Onshoring, I'll call it, sense, is bringing more of the production here back on site, particularly for whether it be, if possible, APIs or a lot of products that are in shortage or critical need, you know, pandemic-related, vaccine-related, technology or related. But if you're manufacturing, there are certain things that really do have to be on site. When you're not purely in the development phase and you're doing things on site, there is a need sometimes to be on site.
Yeah.
So there is truly sometimes that as well.
Hmm. Do you think a lot of that onshoring is just happening because of supply chain issues that we saw during COVID where companies don't want to have the risk anymore? Or what do you think is driving that?
That's part of it. Costs in some of the other countries have gone up as well. So it's not as detrimental.
Favorable.
Yeah, not as favorable. There are other countries, though, that labor is affordable. But there's also a lot of nationalism. Despite the way countries did somewhat get together on launching the COVID vaccine, or at least some of the, I'll say the Pfizer, J&J, et cetera, one, Moderna one, there was a lot of collaboration on that and international efforts. There has been a lot of nationalism in the world the last few years. And a lot of the places that products come from, or APIs come from, or drug product comes from, are not necessarily on great terms with us at times. And there is also competition from certain other countries to try to take more of a lead. And so, yeah, we have seen, I mean, the number of products on the drug shortage list in this country just grows. And there is a desire on our government's part as well. It's not just out of a supply demand standpoint. There's a desire on our government's part to make sure where our needs are secure. And one way to do it is to make sure
supply chain secure. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't necessarily solve the API puzzle, though. You know, where the API manufacturing it here is one thing. Sourcing it is still a challenge. You know, there's still an extremely high percentage of the APIs that just aren't sourced here. You know, that needs, I don't know the way around that, but that's something that's going to be worked on as well. Probably see more of an increase in certain synthetic materials too.
Where can people find you, Ira?
LinkedIn, you know, just look me up on LinkedIn. They could, IQreferrals.com. And sometimes I find them by other people referring them. If they want to look me up on the net with that topic on networking, I did again post something recently. They may be able to find out there on LinkedIn, and we'll have another one coming out in a few weeks. I did a video on that.
That's really funny. I always ask, where can people find you? For you, it's where can you find them? Thanks for coming on, Ira.
All right. Thanks, Subi. Thanks. All righty.